Why don't we move to the EO's report? And
you've got 6 minutes.
6 minutes? Well,
could take longer.
Yeah, I provided a number of reports in here, and I suggest that we first go to on page, if I can find it. Where's the cadmium?
It's on page, bottom page three on the left.
I passed it up.
What are you?
Right. On the bottom of page three, San Miguel cadmium issue, we provided an update primarily prompted by Mr. Broadwater raising these questions at a previous board meeting. And so we provide that information here, and I think it would be best at this point just to go to Mr. Broadwater as far as his request to speak.
All right. Thank you, board members. David Broadwater. I would like to thank Sheila Soderberg for submitting the report for your EO report, which begins on page 3. But I would also like to draw your attention to the last page of your agenda, which includes attachment E, which is this map of the parcel that we're talking about here, because I will refer to that. I'm going to make a request to the board and the staff to write a letter to county planning staff on this, because there's a date coming up very soon, which is the 25th of this month, at which the Planning Commission of San Luis County is scheduled to hear a postponed tentative tract map proposal for this project. Back in March 9th, they continued the issue until May 25th. Because of the inadequacy of the information that was considered at the time the negative declaration was written. So this has gone back to Josh LeBombard, who's a project manager in the Environmental Division of the County Planning Department, with the assistance of Aaron Labar, who works in the Hazardous Materials Section of the Environmental Health Division of the Public Health Agency. Individuals who I've been communicating with, sharing information, et cetera. What we discovered at first, from this report is the sampling site labeled as GP12, which is in the southwest corner, sort of this parcel, found cadmium concentrations which are 67 times higher than the average amount of cadmium found in uncontaminated agricultural soil in the state. So that raised some levels of concern. And also what's been recognized by county staff and others is that further site analysis is necessary so that we can determine the geographic, horizontal, vertical extent of the cadmium contamination and other levels, whether this represents the high, low, or middle concentration on the parcel. Also, there are other issues that have been brought out by two environmental site assessments which have been done in 2003 and 2004, including prior existing railroad creosote spur called by Union Pacific Railroad, which goes basically from the southwest to the northwest corners of the property, which raises some concerns, as well as some sheds of unknown use on the property in the past. Where we stand right now in terms of the information which has been developed but we don't yet have access to are the laboratory reports that were done on the Phase 2 environmental assessment. The county has requested and received about 200 pages of those lab results from all these soil assessments, and there are some pages that are missing from those, and so he is requesting that from the consultant for the property owner. Also, what we still have yet to receive is some aerial photos so that we can figure out what other areas need further investigation for other types of contamination. Additional site photos that were taken, and Union Pacific Railroad still continues to refuse answers about its past activities on the property or about what a creosote spur really is. In addition, there's information that's not yet been developed, which includes, as I mentioned earlier, additional site assessments, probably going to be soil sampling of some type to try to determine the level of contamination and extent of it on this property. As I understand it from the Hazardous Material person in the Environmental Health Division, that work plan. He's still working on looking at the lab results and trying to develop a work plan to submit to the developer for getting further site assessment, and that has yet to be done, as I understand it. So it looks like there is some potential for groundwater or surface water contamination, at least as a result of the cadmium concentrations that are on the property. But basically, at this point, it's not possible to tell whether that's probable or possible or what because of the lack of information about the extent of the contamination on this property. And so my request to you would be to suggest or recommend that you direct Sheila, who's looking for a little bit more work than she already has, to write a letter to the planning department, environmental division, stating your interest and concern that there could be some surface or groundwater contamination issues, but that more information needs to be developed. I have a very low, almost nil expectation that by the 25th of this month they're going to be able to develop enough information for the Planning Commission to actually make a decision on this. But I would like the board or the staff to express concern about the need for this information. It's been requested a number of times over the past, the laboratory results, the site photos, et cetera, and they have not been forthcoming.
And they've been requested by the county?
Been requested by myself and county.
So the county doesn't have all the information. Did you think that?
Not yet. They have more information at this point. For instance, the laboratory reports, he has a partial report, but he hasn't been able to digest or supply that to me yet. But there are missing parts of that that the developer has yet to supply. We've received three site photos in the Phase 2 environmental site assessment. But those are numbered in a sequence 11, 12, and 13, indicating that there are many more. In addition to that, from the Phase 1 site assessment, there have been aerial photos that have been looked at that are an attachment to that particular report that we have yet to receive. And I don't think the county has received those. In talking with Sheila, I think she has not been able to have access to a number of those important documents as well.
Well, it seems like, at least from the staff report, that in the soil samples there were no PCBs, TPH, VOCs, or pesticides detected, and that we're looking only at, I mean, it's a very nominal amount of PAHs.
Yeah, and that's taken from, I believe, and of course Sheila can speak for that.
Yeah.
We have a copy of the Phase 2 limited site assessment that was conducted by Environmental Management Incorporated for the property owner. And that, of course, it contained a summary description of some of the findings and some of the chemicals that were tested for, but only a very small amount of information about three findings in three of the soil sampling sites that raised some level of concern. So,
Sheila, what is the threat to water quality here?
Actually, at this point in time, we only have limited soil data and soil sample information that's out there. We expect the depth to water, I should say that the cadmium issue that we're talking about is at 10 feet below ground surface in one soil sample. And in that particular soil sample, it exceeded a leachability standard, if you will, that there is a potential that it could leach to groundwater at that particular concentration. However, we don't know what the depth to groundwater is. We're anticipating if it's similar to what there's some service station sites in the vicinity. It's about 17 to 20 feet deep, depending on the seasonal variation. So there might be a threat to water quality. There might not be. At this point in time, the county is requiring additional information from the developer as to the information that was in the Phase 1 and Phase 2 assessments. The county is also going to write a directive letter, from what I understand, back to the developer to do additional site assessment out there, which may involve collecting groundwater samples if groundwater is encountered. So at this point in time, the county, we see the county as being the lead agency. And I should specify it's County Environmental Health. And they basically are probably more appropriate to, and they do, they talk amongst themselves, but to have County Environmental Health is counseling the planning, the county planning staff. They are in constant communication. There's additional assessment that needs to be done out there, and the county staff will direct the developer to do additional work to evaluate if there is any risk to human health for these future residences or to water quality. In the event that it looks like there are water quality threats or that water quality has been impacted, the county environmental health then transfers the site to the water board for a regulatory oversight. And then we would actually be the lead agency requiring the developer or that historical property owner, the railroad, to do additional assessment.
Is the county moving in an appropriate fashion?
Yes, they are.
To address this, in your opinion?
Yes.
And do you think it would be premature for us to issue a 13-267 letter?
Yes, since they are, they currently, it is their purview. Usually, if there's a threat to public health or safety, they're more appropriate. In the event with this cadmium at 10 feet, in the event that the county is not able to handle that particular soil assessment or soil evaluation, they could also refer the case to one of our sister agencies, the Department of Toxic Substance Control, in the event that they feel that they cannot adequately address any of these site issues in terms of public health and safety. Right now, it's hard to say because we don't have data. We just have basically five locations, three soil samples from each location, and we have soil sample data. We don't have any groundwater data at this point.
Well, but it sounds like if the leachability score,
yes,
on the cadmium at 10 feet indicates that there's a potential for leaching.
Correct.
That there is, that in and of itself enough to conclude that there is a threat to groundwater?
Well, it would help to know the depth to water, for example.
At that location.
Exactly.
Can we just get that information from the county right now? Does the county have it?
The county doesn't necessarily have that because you're asking for site-specific data, which is part of their request.
Okay.
Right back to the developer. So in that sense, we're going to get that information once the developer turns in a site assessment report. So that is forthcoming. So we should know pretty quickly here.
And are we going to get, or is the county going to get any groundwater data on contamination?
I would imagine it would depend on not only assessing this railroad spur and this shed, that during, as part of this investigation, to evaluate the lateral and vertical extent of any contamination that's out there, they may actually get that groundwater data as part of that evaluation.
Okay.
So it's hard to say, but if they say, we're going to do five borings to 20 feet around the storage shed, there's a likelihood they will encounter groundwater, so they would get that. But in the event that they don't encounter the groundwater, then we still wouldn't have that information. What we would have, though, is additional soil sample data that says, which we can evaluate, then, are the cadmium concentrations in the soil there so high that there still is that potential to leach to groundwater.
Mm.
So we still have, there's still that option where we can get more data and they can still require them to do groundwater assessment.
Okay.
I think they need to delineate the problem, evaluate the problem that they know now, and actually, if they encounter groundwater during that process, they need to take a sample.
Well, then let's make sure this stays on the next EO's report.
Okay.
So that we can be apprised of what's going on, and Mr. Broadwater can, be also tracking this, and he can,
yes,
express any concerns he's got to the board.
Okay.
At that time.
And actually, Mr. Broadwater and I have been in pretty good communication, I'd say, as well as I've been in contact with county staff. For example, I spoke to Mr. Labar's supervisor yesterday.
Okay.
So we are in constant communication. If it's not about this site, then it may be about other sites that are very similar to this.
Okay.
So. Yeah, there's a all we know at this point in terms of leachability testing and exceeding the limits is this GP12 spot here. And if you look at it, this is a over five acre spot. There's quite a large distance between that one soil sample and any of the other ones even near it. Mm-hmm. We don't know if the 24 part per million, which is 67 times higher than background, represents the most, you know, the highest concentration of cadmium on the site, the lowest, whatever. We don't know how far it extends around there. And because of the fact that, you know, there is a potential leachability problem, the Regional Water Board may end up having some concern about this. I think you would have some concern based on just the information that we do have that there's a potential for groundwater issues. And my question to you is, do you want the county agency, the Planning Commission, making a decision on the 25th of this month to go further down the road on this project without gathering that information? Would be the reason I would be asking you to write a letter to them about your concerns. I know that you can't, it doesn't, at least it doesn't seem to me, you can conclude, either rule in or rule out, that there's a role for your agency or surface or groundwater issues, but...
Well, we can always write letters. There's nothing wrong with that. Mr. Briggs?
May I just offer one other piece of information, too? The letter that the county has prepared requesting the additional assessment data from the previous assessments, the letter that they would be writing to the developer or the historic property owners is to request a work plan. So to actually get the data itself, they would have to submit a work plan. The county would evaluate the work plan. You know, then they would go out, get approval from the county. They would do the work. Then at that point in time, you might get some information. But that may not be well beyond the May 25th deadline. That may be six months from now by the time you work through the whole process to actually get data.
Well, so. Can you write a letter, you know, expressing the board's concern in this issue and to make sure that the county gets all the appropriate information that it needs to fully evaluate what's going on and to be able to determine whether there's an impact to groundwater. I think that's what he's looking for, and I think it's appropriate for the board to express its concern that, you know, a thorough investigation is conducted.
Will do.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Sheila, for that.
Welcome.
Mr. Briggs, any got other things on here?
I provided a number of kind of extra updates for you on the Clean Beaches Initiative, this work on nutrient endpoints, on the Consolidated Grants Program, and such. Mr. Jeffries mentioned the agricultural field trip that we were that the board was invited to attend, and that a couple board members did attend, and I was able to attend, and John Robertson attended, Allison, and so I provided a summary here. As Mr. Jeffries said, the previous discussion item that we had on Amanda's item about the grants kind of brought this to mind, because some of the things that we saw were best management practices that solve some of these problems. For example, hedgerows, they were demonstrated in this field trip as not only valuable in terms of being a filter strip, as you normally think of a filter strip as being a buffer as far as runoff, but I thought one of the neat things about it was they talked about the beneficial insects that they're able to attract by virtue of the specific design of these hedgerows and what specific plants they use to attract those specific insects. Beneficial insects are beneficial from the farmer's standpoint because they gobble up and keep away the harmful insects. And in one site, they were able to basically eliminate the pesticides that they had previously used. So the farmer talked about it in terms of what a great cost savings it was. And, of course, from a water quality standpoint, there's a benefit that if you aren't applying pesticides, there's really no danger of those pesticides running off and causing toxicity in the water. And then similarly, we saw an erosion site, not as severe as the one that Amanda was talking about, but an area that was kind of wiped out from excessive erosion from a road primarily and upstream development hard surface. And in that case, the farmer was originally thinking about sort of a conventional approach of putting in a big pipeline and basically creating more hardscape with a pipeline, kind of similar to the idea of concreting a creek, and then covering that over. And with the working with the RCD, he went with a softer approach, which was basically a vegetated swale. And again, in that case, he was talking about how great it was because not only did it work, but it was a lot less expensive than the sort of the typical traditional approach. And this is a spot that has obviously been used many, many times for similar kinds of tours, as I think all the locations were. And so it does show that, you know, on the one hand, I get a little dismayed by looking at these specific spots, and you just think about all the number of such spots there are throughout our region. And when you look at an individual project, you think, gee, it's just a drop in the bucket. But on the other hand, if these are used in this way, as Amanda was talking about with these projects as demonstration projects, and you actually get the farmers and the operators not only talking about how it's wonderful for the world and society because it's better for water quality, but it can actually save them money. You know, there's the incentive that you're asking about.
That's what I wanted to do.
So I thought, and I would say, if anything, there was probably more emphasis on how they were saving money than there was on the water quality.
That always gets people attention when you can save money. But that one particular project that you were talking about, Roger, we actually got to see it work because it was raining while we were there.
Yes.
So it's obvious that the erosion control did work with the grasses that were planted there, and it surely saved him a lot of money, but it also saved the landscape.
And there were just some gee whiz things, because the Monterey County Ag Commissioner was there, and of course for some reason he was mostly interested in Monterey County, even though we visited Santa Cruz County as well. But I mentioned a couple of figures in here that were pretty astounding, and that of course California is the number one ag producer in the nation. But if Monterey County were ranked as a state, it would rank 15th in the nation in terms of ag production. I think he had about $3.5 billion a year in terms of ag production for Monterey County. And of course the other big ag producing counties in our region are no slouch. I think he also came up with I got in here, our region produces about $7 billion in ag production. So it's a huge, huge industry. Another thing that was pointed out is that I think, unlike most other areas in the state and in the nation, our region is one of the most intensively worked areas in terms of having so many areas that are triple cropped. And so you basically have year-round production. And, of course, there's a lot more potential for the problems that are associated with that, with such intensive agriculture. So with the magnitude of the ground that's worked here and that time cycle, just makes sense that it's a big problem that we do need to be focusing on, and we are focusing on appropriately.
I'd like to add a comment. I was able to attend that day, and I was really glad I did. But also, we had a chance to have some of our State Water Board members with us, and I think that the insight they gained that day, I could tell from their comments, that they were, moved to consider more broadly how some of the programs and the involvement and cooperative involvement of our growers and some of the issues related to funds, grant programs, funding criteria, and so forth. I think it gave them a chance to see in new light some of the outcomes, some of the successes that are going on, and I think some of the commitment that they sensed from the growers that were with us that day, who took us onto their property, talked about the experiences they were having, the kind of practical side of seeing changes at work, and then relating that to their broader community. I think that had a good impact, and I'm hoping that we see more of that kind of field site visit combined, you know, state, regional, and local level informal discussions. I think that was a very, very productive day for a number of reasons.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Dr. Hunter, because actually what I think what actually prompted this field trip, which and the hosts were the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, and it seemed what prompted it was this issue about, well, two things: the GPS reporting requirement to be very specific to specific properties, and then secondly, the language that the State Board adopted for the grants regarding repayment of grants if it wasn't completed totally as originally specced out. Any other questions on that aspect?
That aspect of the report?
Right.
No.
Okay, next. And the last thing that I was going to mention is the I provided for you as a supplemental sheet, actually Carol did, the future agenda item list.
Yes.
And Mr. Jeffries had asked about timing as far as power plants in particular, and also connection with the Lands Commission action regarding once-through cooling, and I believe you also asked about desal connection. So on the future agenda items list, you'll note as far as the power plant's timing, and of course you can set your watch by this because it never changes. So I think I heard a snicker. But we have on page, I don't see page numbers. Anyway, under December, the December listing, turn the page over there. And so we have the reissuance for the permit for the Morro Bay power plant. It still says Duke Energy, even though it's LS Power is buying Duke, and we're not sure if Duke is going to stay on the permit. Yeah, it's the Morro Bay power plant. That's true. So anyway, that's for reissuance of the existing permit, not for the proposed upgrade. We were holding off on this action because of the upgrade, and now that's been delayed, and so we really need to get to the reissuance of on the existing plant. Then we have in February, it says Diablo, PG&E Diablo. We've got a meeting, I think, this next week. Another step along the way as far as that goes. And then for March, which would be, we're assuming that would be a North meeting. The board has not adopted that schedule yet. But that would be the Duke Moss Landing Power Plant reissuance. And then also, in addition, if we back up for September, and if you look at September under the EO report, it has Moss Landing Power Plant staff response to Elkhorn Slough Coalition questions. And what that is, we received a number of communications from Madeline Clark of the Elkhorn Slough Coalition, and basically she's asked for you to take up the Moss Landing Power Plant as soon as possible. And part of her asking for that is prompted by the desal connection, and which I think gets back to your question about what is the connection. So there are two desal proposals, desalinization proposals in the Monterey area. There's the CalAm proposal, and then there's the Pajaro Sunny Mesa Water District slash Poseidon proposal. Both of those, in both cases, they're proposing a pilot plant, and that's where they want to run various processes to see what works best, and then just route it right back into the effluent line. And Harvey, what's the status on the CalAm pilot project?
The CalAm pilot project is awaiting permission from the county, a county permit. There's some issues with the Duke power plant on getting that permit extended, but we're waiting for the county to issue the permit before we issue anything.
We see that as a low threat kind of situation because it's taking water out, messing with it, and putting the same water back into the line. It's not a full scale operation or anything. That would be different than how we would handle an application for an actual full scale plant where they're not just putting the water back into the line. And so that would be similar for the Pajaro Sunny Mesa proposal as well in terms of how we would view it.
Yeah, I think they actually got their county permit, but I recall seeing that it had been appealed to the Coastal Commission.
That's so correct.
We're still waiting on that.
Okay. And, of course, well, maybe you don't know, but CalAm is looking at the power plant property in terms of siting, whereas the Pajaro Sunny Mesa is looking at the former National Refractories site, which is right across the street from the power plant. It's an industrial park, I guess you call it now.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, of course, when we get a complete application for either or both facilities, we would process those as we would an NPDES permit and bring those before you. We don't know what the timing is because we don't have an application form.
Mr. Briggs, what generated my concern was some of those things that you brought up, but also you gave us a copy of the State Lands Commission.
Right, I was going to get to that.
Okay. And I was asking that the staff prepare some kind of study session for us because we do have the power plants coming before us somewhere down the line. How the EPA's decision, the State Lands Commission's decision, how does this all affect us and the power plants? And I don't know what Madeline Clark's emailing to you, but I suppose that it's pretty much the same as it was before, that they filed suit on the Moss Landing before, and it was remanded back to us. If the board members remember, we reheard that. So I think that she's probably looking at this same document, and this is the first time I've seen it, so I just saw articles in the paper about what they were doing. But
right.
I thought just that we would be brought up to date so we were more prepared.
Okay, well, let me mention, first of all, as far as Madeline Clark's request, as I said, we have that scheduled for September. And the reason for waiting is because of the location that was basically
north.
In cooperation with her. Because she said there would be several people who would be interested in attending from that area. So that is simply to let the board basically provide some more information along the lines that I've just provided for you as far as timing and the how we're handling the desal. But then it's an opportunity for Madeline Clark and anyone else to address the board on that topic. So another thing that prompted her, besides the desal, another thing that prompted her concern was this Lands Commission resolution. It was misreported in the paper. The original, or I shouldn't say the original, but there was a draft Lands Commission resolution which would have prohibited once-through cooling water by the year, was it 2020?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, down the road a ways. What was, we understand what was adopted is what you have here. which is from their website. And if you look in the middle of page 3, I think the key paragraph is where it says, resolve that the commission shall not approve new leases for power facilities or leases for repowering existing facilities or extensions or amendments of existing leases for existing power facilities whose operations include, once they're cooling, then here's the key thing, unless the power plant is in full compliance or engaged in an agency-directed process to achieve full compliance with requirements imposed to implement both Clean Water Act Section 316B and California water quality laws determined by the appropriate agency. So what that's saying is it gets back to our process.
Right.
And so I don't really see that it has any effect as far as our dealing with our existing power plants. Like I say, it was misreported in the papers.
Hmm. Obvious.
Right.
And I think Madeline Clark misunderstood because she thought it was still back with the idea of a prohibition. But anyway, that's where we stand with that issue. Are there other questions on that?
Not on that.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you have anything to add, Michael?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. I have one thing to add as part of the discussion. We got a, in our, not our packet, but something that was sent to us, was this internal memo regarding the East Fork Timber Harvest Plan.
Uh-huh.
Do you know about this?
Yeah.
Vaguely. So. I just wanted to... Has the rest of the board had a chance to look at this? This came in the mail, you know, a few weeks ago. It's...
Who's it from?
It's dated March 27th. It's from Julia Dyer to Chris Adair.
It was part of a board mailing.
A board mailing, right. Thank you. It was a board mailing. See, I do read them, Carol, even when they come in the middle. But it... attaches a letter from Redwood Empire that from David Van Lennep, who maybe you guys recall seeing, maybe not Dr. Hunter, because I don't think you've had the opportunity to have any of the timber harvest issues before you in Santa Cruz. Yeah. So this is a letter critical of staff and... I guess the processing time for a permit. But if you read the memo, you'll see that he didn't have everything, I guess, in the application as he should have. Mm-hmm. So there seems to be some miscommunication with respect to him. Where are we at now with processing that permit? Any
Chris,
idea?
Can you answer anything? Can I borrow that?
Sure.
I didn't bring it down with me. Can you, Chris, can you respond to where we are with the
Chris Adair, Harvest Board staff? That permit's been issued.
It has been?
Yes.
Okay.
And it was issued actually before timber harvest could actually begin.
Okay.
So I think it was timely in that manner.
Okay. When he wrote that letter, had I guess he wasn't aware that his application package was missing information?
Quite frankly, I think he was aware. He and Julia had had quite a bit of conversation about the packet. Mr. Van Lennep's frustrated with the process. Julia had definitely put his stuff on the back burner until he got it complete and was working on winter ops, getting out, doing winter inspections. But like I said, his permit's been processed and he's in operation now.
And how is the permitting going with our the new matrix and kind of decision-making scheme?
I think it's going great.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have an update coming to you in July.
In July. Okay, wonderful. All right. Thank you.
Also, the reason we provided that to you is because at the tail end, that's what I was checking, at the tail end of Mr. Lennep's letter, he asked for it to be disseminated to the board.
Right. I saw that. Okay. I think we can conclude the hearing today. Oh, Dr. Hunter.
I'm sorry. I had intended to talk just really briefly about the Water Quality Coordinating Committee.
Oh, okay.
and it slipped my mind, so if you all would be patient with me. And the reason I wanted to bring it up is several of us attended, but not everybody could stay for the entire two-day meeting. Dr. Bowker and I were able to stay for the tail end of it. And the important thing that happened in the afternoon was that Michael Thomas, who just walked out of the room, gave the presentation on our process here for Region 3 and the visioning effort and kind of proactive development of a strategy that allows for, you know, getting outside the box of enforcement and the regulatory actions that we're involved in. And it was a very effective presentation. I know that it had an impact on the folks that were there from the other regions, as well as our state board members, and in particular Chair Dudok made comments about how excited she was about this strategy. She felt it had promise or potential to be adapted for their own use, and I think Michael's enthusiasm for it in terms of the experience of the staff, you know, through this process up to this point, and kind of, you know, some of the productive elements of it that they're already seeing benefit from, in terms of changing the dynamics of staff creativity, problem solving, etc. So I think Dr. Bowker and I were pretty proud to be sitting there, and we were, I think seeing kind of, you know, some immediate kind of benefit to a work in progress. So I thought I would share that with all of you that weren't able to attend.
And thanks for those comments. Our visioneering will be the main topic that we want to discuss with you at the offsite/onsite meeting.
Good. So is that meeting going to entirely be onsite?
Well, I suppose we could, if you wanted to, we could adjourn from here and go over to the offsite.
Where's the offsite?
Where is the offsite?
In Avila.
Is it that little yacht thing?
Mm-hmm.
It's a cutie.
It's not very far. It only takes 15 minutes to get there.
Good.
If we're not expecting a big crowd, we could do the whole thing at the yacht club.
No, we can't do that. Not allowed.
Okay. We are done for today. Thank you. And our meeting is adjourned, and we meet next with the off-site meeting on June 8th.